Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it.
The Debatables
on Dash Radio, part of the Almighty Baller Radio Network.
Jimmy starts the drive, step back in the air.
Oh, happy step back and kiss myself. Big time plays, big time plays.
Woo! Butler.
Talking about the Chicago Bulls and NBA.
Your best source for coverage from the Madhouse on Madison.
The ceiling is the roof.
In one corner, host Jordan Malley.
His talk about patience with this team and his talk about direction, he says that the level of patience needs to come with fans and that this thing can't happen overnight. Well, obviously it can't happen overnight, but where have we gone in the last 3 years that says that we have any type of future?
And in the other corner, co-host Matt Peck.
But there are plenty of people out there in Bulls fandom who might look at that potential playoff matchup and say, hey, they can upset the one or the two seed. Maybe they'll get to the conference finals. Maybe they'll get to the finals. There are Bulls fans out there dumb enough to believe that. If you consider yourself one of that population, I say for shame, wake the fuck up. But those people, those Bulls fans do exist.
Who's better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
Like looking, finds Rose. Rose trying to get open, fires away. Bang! It's over! The Bulls win at the buzzer!
Kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
That's our goal, to get younger at positions, to get more athletic, and at the same time to retool, not rebuild.
The Debatables starts now on Dash Radio.
What's up and welcome into the Debatables, brought to you by Almighty Baller Radio. My name is Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio every Thursday from 6 to 7 a.m. and 11 to noon Central Time, broadcasting on the Almighty Baller channel where basketball is always being discussed. You can follow us on Twitter at Debatables and all of our content over at almightyballer.com. If you want to follow me and Matt, you can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley and Bulls underscore Peck. Well, this has been quite the interesting first week, or like about first 10 days of the off season. And for me, I love this time of the year, like right before the draft, and that goes with any league. Like I love when there's just all these trade rumors going around, possibility of guys moving different places, and that's even more exciting when it involves your team. But we have to start with it. All these Jimmy Butler rumors are absolutely bananas.
It's crazy. I mean, everybody should have known that they were going to come back up again, because obviously Jimmy Butler has been centered in trade rumors for the last 2 or 3 years. Basically, even before Derrick Rose left, Butler's been a big part of NBA trade rumors. The Bulls are getting closer and closer to that rebuild button, but they still are afraid to push it because they are afraid that they won't get enough for Butler. And of course, like, not only are the Bulls teetering on the edge of considering a full-on rebuild, but there are plenty of teams out there who would love to get the two-way player and the star caliber player that Jimmy Butler is. I mean, it's not just the Celtics. We've now heard early through the first couple stages of this week, as we get close to the Thursday night draft, that the Timberwolves want Butler, the Phoenix Suns want Butler, the Cleveland Cavaliers want Butler. I'm not surprised that all of this has happened and all of this stuff is coming, but I do still expect that at the end of the day, at the end of this weekend when the draft has come and gone, we're talking about Butler still being back in a Bulls uniform, about the fact that Wade picked up his $24 million option and the Bulls are going to run it back next season.
Yeah, I think all these rumors that we were talking about, it's all of a sudden going for nothing, and that my feeling like that has changed for one reason, and that's last night after all these rumors, and where there was like, at one time there was like five teams being discussed about possible landing spots for Butler, with the Celtics, the Timberwolves, the Suns, the Cavaliers, all of these teams having interest in Jimmy Butler coming their way. And then all of a sudden it's like 6-7 o'clock last night, and we get an update that says, oh, Dwayne Wade's opting back into his contract. And then like 30 minutes later, Jimmy Butler says, you know what, I don't want to play for the Cavaliers. I don't know about my long-term situation there, so I'd rather stay in Chicago. And all of a sudden, it's like, okay, so now we're going to pay Wade. Butler wants to stay here. We're going to run this all back after all these offers. First, let's break down each one of these offers and see, like, if there's even a possibility, if the Bulls are going to make that move, like what they would possibly be hearing over the next 24 hours. So I want to start with the Celtics situation, because I feel like, in a sense, the Celtics are sort of bullying the Bulls. And if one of the rumors that they had out there yesterday was that the Bulls offered Jimmy Butler for the number 3 pick and that was it for straight up, and the Celtics said no. So if that's true, that is ridiculous on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking, and that report came from Vincent Goodwill of CSN Chicago, and I'm thinking he maybe worded that wrong, but he never went back and corrected himself after everybody flipped out and said, what? Are you nuts? Because, A, if the Bulls actually made that offer and said, we'll give you Butler for the number 3 straight up, Gar Packs are even stupider than we thought, because he's worth more than that. Also, if the Bulls did in fact make that offer to Boston and Danny Ainge said no thanks, then Danny Ainge is dumber than we all thought. Because why in the hell would you not send away a number 3 pick for a all-star in Jimmy Butler to your team that's trying to go back to the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe knock off the Cavs this time? I mean, that doesn't make sense on either side. So to me, that one is absolutely nuts. And I would disagree with you, Jordan, to say that the Celtics have all of the power in this hypothetical trade with the Bulls. Look, the Bulls' asking price hasn't changed. They still are demanding a king's ransom for Jimmy Butler. They're demanding 2 players, starter caliber, young prospects, and 2 high draft picks. That's why they didn't trade Butler at the deadline, because they didn't see an offer like that. That's why they didn't trade Butler leading up to the last summer's NBA draft, because they didn't see an offer like that. The Celtics can, you know, try shortchanging the Bulls, but Gar Packs aren't going to trade Jimmy Butler unless they get the exact caliber offer that they want. So the Bulls do have some power in those negotiations.
I think another thing with the Vincent Goodwill thing, too, is I feel like he did kind of explain the reasoning why the Celtics did that. I remember him saying yesterday that the Celtics were looking at Blake Griffin. He talked about it on the radio, and then he even talked about it on TV the same day yesterday, that maybe the Celtics said no, and it's not because they're not interested in Butler. Obviously, they have high interest in Butler, but it's because maybe they want to make a few different moves before they move for Butler, and which makes sense. Think about it. If the Bulls, what we've been hearing is the Bulls like Josh Jackson, correct, at number 3. That's kind of been the rumor. There hasn't been anybody else that really that has been talked about as what the Bulls want as far as trading up into the top 3. They're not getting number 1 and they're not getting number 2. So if they're getting 3, 4, or possibly even 5, you're looking at either Josh Jackson, Jason Tatum, or De'Aaron Fox. And the only name I've heard is Josh Jackson, so for me, it would make sense if the Celtics said, all right, no, we're going to wait. We're going to take our draft pick at 3. We'll take Josh Jackson. See at July 1st or July 5th if we can go out and get Blake Griffin to come here. See what kind of money that matches up. And then maybe that gives them leverage to kind of use pieces to expend on top of getting Butler. I don't know. That's where kind of I'm feeling like maybe the Celtics, in a sense, are saying, you know what, we can kind of wait on this Butler deal till after the draft, because it seems like if we take the guys the Bulls want, we can still have leverage in a trade to send him to the Bulls for Butler maybe in a month or a few weeks from now when we figure out free agency.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, the other thing that I feel like Bulls fans should be reminding themselves as we all freak out leading up to Thursday night's draft is that, look, the Butler situation is like, people have forgotten that, A, the Celtics, as you mentioned, Josh Jackson, it sounds like when Danny Ainge explained their trade down with Philly, he said, we were pretty sure that the guy we were going to take at number 1 will still be there at 3. He's obviously talking about Josh Jackson, maybe Jason Tatum, but most people believe that's Josh Jackson. So It sounds like he absolutely plans to keep that number three pick and use it on Josh Jackson. And then also Gordon Hayward. Has everybody forgotten the whole Gordon Hayward story? Because that's the guy that the Celtics are going after. That's the thing that I've been hearing from sources who are closely following the Butler-Celtics thing is that, yeah, sure, they'd love to get Butler on board, but they don't want to sacrifice all these picks that Ainge has stockpiled, and they would rather just use that number three pick to add another young piece to this core and go after Gordon Hayward in free agency because it would cost the future of the franchise a lot less.
So I'm looking at the Celtics payroll here just in a glance to see what they could get off their books if they could possibly pay Hayward and Griffin at the same time, but that doesn't even look possible. And then trying to wedge Jimmy Butler's contract in the same, they'd have to give up some pieces, and that might even be talking like possibly trying to dump Al Horford's massive salary, but I don't even think that they want to move him after a year. That wouldn't even make any sense. Another thing on the Celtics issue too is I did see a report from I want to say it was Mark Stein. He said that the Celtics have yet to work out Josh Jackson, and we're, what, 24 hours from the draft? And from what I was reading from Josh Jackson's people is he said that there was two things either going to happen, that Josh Jackson wasn't going to work out for the Celtics unless they guaranteed that he was going to be taken at number three, that they weren't going to waste their time, and the Celtics wanted, and the Celtics felt like they haven't really said anything about who they've worked out, and I thought that was interesting too. If that's the guy that they're going to take, how have you not worked him out yet? How have you not brought him in and worked him out like almost immediately after you made that number one pick or that trade for your number one pick? So that makes me think now, okay, maybe the Celtics aren't going to take Josh Jackson, and maybe this leverage that the Bulls want him is no longer going to be there. So there's a lot of
Danny Ainge
is
just playing it close to the vest. Think about it. To use a parallel, nobody expected the Bears to draft Mitch Trubisky, right? Because there was very little talk about him working out. He was like, yeah, I kind of worked out for the Bears once. It was over very quickly. But Ryan Pace just didn't want everybody else to know that he's the guy he was planning on taking. Ainge could very well be doing the same thing. And I also heard a different theory that it wasn't Josh Jackson saying, I'm not going to work out for the Celtics unless they are giving me a draft promise. I heard a different theory that was he didn't think there was any chance the Celtics were going to take him when the Celtics were still holding on to that number one pick. So he said, well, what's the point? If they're not going to take me at number one, what's the point of working out for them? I think at this point, that seems a lot more likely than Jackson saying, no, I refuse to work out for you. And even if he doesn't come in and work out for the Celtics sometime in the next 24 hours, they still might take him. I think they still will take him.
It's weird as we get up to this time now where we saw teams flipping picks, and now all of these rumors with teams making moves. And I feel like this has been one of the most active pre-NBA drafts where we've seen a lot of picks already moving, and we've seen teams interested in a lot of these stars. And for me, as a basketball fan, this is super exciting. Like, you have Paul George that's up in the air that people are talking about moves to possibly make to move him. You've got Jimmy Butler possibly with the move there. And then you've got a plethora of stars out there that are going to be free agents turn July 1st. So there's a lot of moving parts. So with the Celtics, I don't know. I still feel like if Butler is going to get moved, the Celtics are your best option. And whether or not they can figure out what they want to do as far as the free agency goes, whether Gordon Hayward is going to be a guy that they think they can land, or even Blake Griffin's a guy that they think that they can land, they're going to have to figure that out money-wise. But I thought for sure, like thinking about it now, that I feel like the Celtics are going to maybe sit back. Like you said, take Josh Jackson. If this all falls through, they still got Josh Jackson, a number three pick and a solid player. So if it all falls through, then they'll at least still have that. But I don't know, money-wise, it's weird. I don't know where the cap is, but right now, if everything's stand pat, the Celtics are on the books for $71 million. I don't know where the cap's at right now coming into this year. Is it close to, like, $100 million? So they'd have, like, what, roughly?
Yeah, I think the estimate's, like, $102 million, something like that.
So the Celtics would have roughly about $30 million on their books if they took on. So that means that they can assuming signed one top-notch free agent, and my money would be on them throwing the money to Gordon Hayward. So that's where I kind of get stuck in feeling like, all right, where are they going to put Butler's money in as far as being able to kind of finagle that with the players that are on the roster that the Bulls would want?
See, Jordan, that's why I think as much as people keep talking about Butler and the Celtics, they're not the most likely candidate at this point. It's pretty clear that Ainge is just all about hoarding draft picks, right? People are talking about maybe him flirting that number one to get a star, and instead he traded it down to get more picks. And people in Boston are like, dude, okay, well, at what point are you actually going to cash these in? But he's still stocking picks and stocking picks. That's why I don't think that the Butler-Celtics thing is happening. If the Bulls make a trade for Butler, I think the two most likely candidates now are Phoenix and Minnesota. Because both of those teams have young, interesting pieces that the Bulls will be interested in, and the Suns have the number four pick in this upcoming draft, and Minnesota's got number seven. And from what I've heard from my sources, obviously the Bulls would love to get a guy like Markel Fultz. That's not going to happen. But they still see seven or eight guys that are at the top of this draft that they would feel good about bringing in to be a future piece of their core. So if that's the case, and either Phoenix or Minnesota is willing to give up that pick and one or two other young pieces to get Butler to pair with Karl-Anthony Towns / Andrew Wiggins, or to pair with Devin Booker in Phoenix's case, I find that to be far more likely.
Yeah, I would rather, like, for me, I would rather that be the case too, because then at least you know the Timberwolves and Phoenix both have pieces that are enticing and that would make the Bulls better immediately as far as a rebuild in the future. And my thing is with working with the Timberwolves, obviously you have Tom Thibodeau there. Like, that for me is like looking at Gar Foreman and John Paxson trying to work with Tom Thibodeau. I just think it's funny every time that that's brought up. Like, Tom Thibodeau must be like in his office, like laughing at the Bulls, like when they're trying to say, you know what, we'll trade you Butler. And Tom Thibodeau's like, yeah, we'd love to have Butler, but we're not giving up anything close to nearly what you guys are going to ask
for. That's the great thing about this. And in my mind right now, I'm just picturing that classic Tibbs laughing gif that is one of my favorite things in existence in the world of gifs. But, I mean, it's a two-sided coin because you know Thibodeau loves Butler, brought Butler up from a scrub off the bench who could play defense but had no offensive game whatsoever, turned him from a great defensive player in the NBA. I mean, Butler won Most Improved Player Award under Tom Thibodeau. Thibodeau obviously loves Butler's work ethic, and he would love to have Butler on that squad. The other side of that coin is that Gar and Pax's relationship with Tibbs is not the best, and you have to fear for Gar Pax either being too timid to engage in realistic trade talks because of that sour relationship, and also be afraid that Gar Pax would somehow mess that up and lose the trade. Because, I mean, if you're talking about things that Minnesota could send us for Butler, obviously they would want the number seven pick. Maybe Chris Dunn, who the Bulls were really high on in the draft last year, engaged in talks with Minnesota about that pick that got done last year. But other than that, it's like they're not giving up Wiggins. People keep putting Wiggins in trade scenarios between the Bulls and Wolves for Butler. They're not giving up Wiggins, even to get Butler. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, if you're a basketball fan and you're throwing Wiggins in a trade deal for Butler, you're a moron. Like, why would the Timberwolves, that was their starting piece to this, their entire rebuild. When they shipped Kevin Love out, that was it. They were going to rebuild, and the future was part of Wiggins. I don't see it. Like, that would make absolutely no sense, like you said. And obviously, as a Bulls fan, I'd love that. Like, bring Wiggins in, I'm cool with that. That's awesome. But that's not going to happen. So now I'm looking at the roster, and it looks like you said, Chris Dunn's probably one of those guys that would get thrown in there. And then at that point, I feel like the Timberwolves would have to choose. It's going back to what we talked about, like, even before the trade deadline and even before the season started last year. It's like, all right, well, the Bulls are going to probably ask for Zach LaVine, too. And I don't even think the Timberwolves will give up Zach LaVine, too. Like, that's another asset that I feel like is going to be good and developed a part of this team. So, like, at a certain point, it's like, all right, there's a lot of guys, and there's a lot of guys that they could give up, but are they really going to do it for Butler? And to me, I'm shaping towards no. Like, how close do you actually realistically think the Timberwolves are to being like straight up competitive in the West? I don't see it for another two or three years, and at that time, Butler's going to be a free agent.
Yeah, I mean, he's got two more years on a very team-friendly deal compared to what some other top-tier players are making after that huge cap swell last year. But you're right. Karl Anthony Towns is a damn good player. And if you're talking about players you want to build your franchise around starting today, it's Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Davis.
I was going to say Anthony Davis too.
Those are the two guys. And so, obviously, pairing Butler with him would certainly help Minnesota get closer to Western Conference relevance. But if you're talking about adding Butler to Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, that's a damn interesting core. And adding Butler makes them a hell of a lot better. But better in the sense of what? 6th, 7th seed in the West? As opposed to missing the playoffs? Maybe the 4th or 5th if they make a big leap? And look, I mean, when Derrick Rose had his MVP season in 2010-11, Tom Thibodeau's first year, they had a 20-win leap, right? They were 41-41, and then they went 62-20, or whatever, or 42-40 to 62-20. That was a big leap, and it was the coaching of Tom Thibodeau and the meteoric rise of Derrick Rose. If Karl Anthony Towns goes nuts next year and Jimmy Butler comes on board, you could make the argument that a 20-win improvement for Minnesota is in the realm of possibility. But likely? No, I don't think so.
I agree with you. I also have a little side note. I'm looking at the payroll what was on the payroll for 2016-2017 for the Timberwolves. Did you know Lance Stephenson was on the Timberwolves payroll?
Really?
Yeah, $144,000 they owed him. They also owed another player that's no longer playing for them, Kevin Garnett. They owed him $8 million. I don't know if that got cut once he decided to retire or not, but it says it's still on their books, so I just thought that was funny. But yeah, you're right. And if you're going to go another route too and say the Timberwolves are willing to give up Ricky Rubio at $14 million, you really want to be the Bulls that are paying Ricky Rubio $14 million for the next 2 years, I'd be fine with that if you're going to throw in Zach LaVine plus 2 top picks. Then I'm okay with that. Especially if they don't want to give up Chris Dunn. Like, if you want to give up Zach LaVine and Ricky Rubio and then 2 picks, that's fine, but I feel like that's going to be the same. It's going to be the same conversation again. The Bulls are going to call. Thibs is going to pick up. They're going to say, all right, we want Rubio, LaVine, your number 7 pick, and then a first-round pick next year. And Thibs is going to fart in the phone and say, all right, see ya. I feel like as much as the Bulls fans would like to see that, and for me, I would rather Jimmy go to the Timberwolves than somewhere like Cleveland, where I fucking hate Cleveland and I hate LeBron. So I don't want him going anywhere near where LeBron's going to continue to win rings. I want to see Jimmy win on his own like he said he wants to. But that brings me to another point now. Can we just say that this is all the Cavaliers' fault for having a dumpster fire of a mess over the last 48 hours in their front office? Like, what the hell is going on there that all of a sudden you were in heavy, heavy hot talks about picking up one of the top 15 players in the league to join LeBron and possibly Kyrie Irving? And all of a sudden, your GM's out. It's a dumpster fire. You're fielding calls with, like, the 4th guy in line now. And now it looks like they're not going to get anything. So I think, Bulls fans, let's all take our hate and our pissed offness if you wanted Butler to get moved at the Cavaliers front office for screwing all this up. Because that's ultimately what it was. Butler was told, you know what, this is a dumpster fire of a mess. I don't know if you want to really come here. And then Butler turned around and said, yeah, well, I don't know what my long-term options are. And it doesn't really look like Cleveland's going to be an option.
Well, look, let's also mention this. Sam Amico or Sam Amick came out and said that whole report about that Joe Cowley's report of Butler saying at first, yeah, I want to go play for the Cavs, trade me to the Cavs, and then Cavaliers players turning around and saying, oh, don't come here, it's a dumpster fire of a situation, the front office is a mess. One of those two guys, who is far more reputable than either, whichever one it was, more reputable than Joe Cowley, came out and said, yeah, I just spoke to a source within the Cavs organization, and they said that was a complete fabrication. Total BS. So, debunk that story. Didn't exist. Totally false. But when it comes to, you know, Jimmy hypothetically going to Cleveland, look, even if Jimmy says to the Bulls and to the Cavs, I don't want to go there, I want to stay in Chicago, bring the Bulls back to prominence, which I do believe. I do believe Jimmy wants to stay and make the Bulls competitive. It's not up to Jimmy. If the Bulls decide that they want to move on and trade him now, sell high, it's not like Jimmy can say no. Doesn't have a no trade clause in his contract.
Right. I feel like Jimmy I feel like Jimmy has all the leverage now in this situation, too. It's like, it sounds like that the Bulls wouldn't just go and make a deal without consulting Butler first, and to whichever team this is that he's going to go to. And like you said, he has been extremely consistent with him talking about how he's wanted to stay in Chicago, and this is the place that, you know, drafted him at number 30, that gave him the contract, the opportunity, and he wants to be the guy that builds it. That's fine. I'm okay with having a guy here that's going to build for the future, but the problem is that we have two guys that are so incompetent at picking draft picks and guys that can't get free agents in here that it's almost like it's not a possibility. It's like Jimmy Butler, I feel like we have to tell him, like, sit him down and tell him, dude, it's not that we don't want you here. It's that we have such incompetence in the front office that doesn't know how to get players to work around you and to build a team that's going to be competitive, that we're wasting your talent here. And why would you want to waste your talent in a place that you know is going to meddle around 500 for the next 3 or 4 years if it stays in the same path? Like, that's, for me, that's what's the most frustrating thing. And if I was Butler, I would feel like I would have to see it in the same light. But maybe Butler's looking at this as, you know what, whatever, I'll spend another 2 years in Chicago, maybe I can make another All-NBA team, I'll take that Supermax, I'll cash in, and then we'll see where we go in 2018 when we've got money to spend for free agents and I can talk guys into that. And that's another thing, too. It's different. Now I feel like it's different than when the Bulls were trying to recruit free agents back in 2010 or even talk about 2013 with Melo. I feel like Butler is way more connected than Rose was and way more sociable, way different type of personality than Rose was. And I feel like if there's anybody that can recruit legitimate stars to come to Chicago, I feel like I have to have some faith in Butler just because of his personality and the guys he's connected with, guys he played on USA Basketball with. I feel like there has to be at least some hope there that Butler could reel in one, possibly two guys to come in Chicago in 2018. But maybe I'm just dreaming.
You're not wrong, Jordan, in the sense that Butler is certainly a more well-liked guy around the NBA than, say, Derrick Rose. And not to say that D. Rose was disliked by his colleagues, but he just was very much an introvert, whereas Butler is an extrovert and enjoys socializing and obviously made some really good friends on Team USA Basketball last summer. So in that sense, yeah, I think Butler would have more success, being that, you know, that guy who lures free agents, who the recruiter, the player slash recruiter, if you will. But let's also remember that it was not Jimmy Butler who went out and recruited Dwayne Wade. The way that Dwayne Wade told the story, and I don't know why he would lie about this, is that Dwayne was gauging his options when thinking maybe it's finally time to pack up and leave Miami. And obviously Chicago was 1A on his list because it's been a dream of his since a childhood to play for the team he grew up rooting for. And he also loved his, you know, his Marquette alum buddy, Jimmy Butler. But he thought Butler wouldn't want him coming in to Chicago and stepping on his toes and, you know, taking over a part of that spotlight. So then his wife, Gabrielle Union, said, "You never know until you talk to Jimmy." D. Wade called up Jimmy, and Jimmy said, "Hell yeah, man, come play with me. Let's win here." That's how that went down. Jimmy Butler didn't go out and recruit Dwayne Wade. Also, second part of that thought, recruiting a 34 going on 35-year-old Dwayne Wade a year ago when his options were limited is a hell of a lot different than going out in the, let's say, hypothetical 2017 free agency class and bringing in a guy like Blake Griffin or Chris Paul or Gordon Hayward or whoever it is you want to talk about. Because recruiting guys in their prime is different than recruiting a veteran on his last legs.
What do you think, just a sidetrack here with the whole Jimmy Butler thing, I also heard this too, that there's a possibility that Jimmy has been talking with Kyle Lowry, one of his like closer buddies from Team USA.
Absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
And that's what I said. I'm like, why would Kyle Lowry come here first for a massive, like, it would have to be a massive pay cut because the Bulls don't have any money to spend. Like, let's be realistic. The Bulls don't have money to spend. So maybe, like, it doesn't even seem like it's not even a relevant possibility that he would come here. But I did hear that you know, that there was talks there. But it would never come to fruition.
You know where you heard that from?
Where?
Joe Cowley.
Oh, my God.
In that same ridiculous rambling article that said Butler wanted to trade to the Cavs and then also didn't.
You know what? I like Joe Cowley. I think he does a great job as far as saying the truth, not holding back from honesty. But yeah, like when you swing and miss at a couple of these that he has over the last couple days, and they've just come out and said that it's been flat out wrong, it's hard to believe a guy after that.
And I mean, like, as far as Lowry goes, like, yes, he and Butler have played together for Team USA. They're probably fairly friendly. But first of all, there's reports from the Toronto front office saying Kyle Lowry has told us he wants to be back. Kyle Lowry can't get the $200 million extension that he can get from Toronto on the free agent market. And even if the Bulls were a team that he was interested in, if he wanted to come and play with Butler, as you said, the Bulls don't have anywhere near the amount of money they'd need to sign him. And he is a... If he does actually test the free agency waters and thinks about leaving Toronto, why in God's name would the Bulls be near the top, anywhere near the top of his list? It makes no sense.
Yeah, so there's another one you can debunk. All right, so we talked Wolves, we talked Celtics, talked Cavs slightly. Now it's back to the Suns deal, which I feel like, to me, this is the most interesting out of them all. There's a lot of pieces in the Suns, in that Suns team, that I would like to have on the Bulls that I think it would be worth a shot giving, even if it's guys that the Suns have given up on already. Plus that number four pick. So say the Bulls do get that number four pick and Boston does take Josh Jackson. That actually, for me, it plays in favor for what I would want the Bulls to take with a top five pick. I want the Bulls, if the Bulls got the top five pick, to take De'Aaron Fox. The Bulls need a legitimate point guard for the future. And I realize the Bulls on their roster right now have like five point guards that can't play. That's fine. Who cares if they draft another point guard? At least you know what you would get in De'Aaron Fox. And I feel like he looks like the best, most mature, knows what he's doing. Out of all of these workouts and talking with the media and everybody else, I feel like he's got it together as far as a recruit. And I would even like to see Jason Tatum. I think Jason Tatum's really good too. I'm scared with Josh Jackson a little bit. I think he's going to be a very good NBA player, but I don't think he is going to be a legitimate top, like, he's going to be legitimate enough to be like a star in this league. But then again, we go back to what Gar and Pax love to talk about, is their 3-year, 4-year guys that have been in college, had the experience. And if the Bulls somehow end up with a top five pick and Josh Jackson's still there, that's probably going to be the guy to take, even though he would be number three out of a top three list at number five, because you're not getting Lonzo and you're not getting Markelle Fultz. So you're in that point.
I mean, if you're talking about the Bulls trading up into the top five and wanting a point guard, like you said, not Fultz, not Bull, they're gone, 1-2. But of the top tier point guards in this draft, like, yeah, I can see De'Aaron Fox having a strong NBA career, but he is not the fast downhill who can also shoot the 3-point guard that Fred Hoiberg is looking for. Right,
exactly.
Like, he is the one point guard in this crop of top-tier point guards who is not a great shooter. And that's what the Bulls need at the point guard position right now. If they are actually going to stick with Fred, and this is, you know, right now we're talking about the Bulls trading away Jimmy Butler, starting over and using a top pick to take that guy. It's not like, it's like, well, you're talking about trying to fit a guy around Butler and Wade. No, we're talking about hypothetical future. But Fred Hoiberg is still the coach of the future for the next 3 seasons unless they fire another coach before his contract is up. And they have said, Gar Pax, that they want to commit to Hoiberg and make his system work. So how about you get him a point guard who can freaking shoot? De'Aaron Fox is not that guy.
And the Suns are sitting over here saying, like, oh, we got a guy like that. We got Brandon Knight. He could shoot for you. Like, We'll give Brandon Knight to you, and the Bull, and we're, as Bulls fans, are like,
no,
cringing.
I mean, if I'm Gar Pax and I'm pulling a deal with the Suns, I want the number four pick, and I want some combination of Marquise Chris, Dragan Bender, and maybe a future
D2
pick
on that. That's exactly what I was gonna say. I want Marquise Chris, and I want Dragan Bender, and like you said, the number four pick, and then a future first round pick. And if you're not willing to give up that much, or you don't want to give up one of the two in Dragan Bender or Marquise Chris, then you got to give me, I know that they've said maybe possibly Eric Bledsoe as a piece to be traded, because there was a weird earlier report like a couple months ago when the Suns as an organization, like their core guys with the team, had this meeting after the season, and Eric Bledsoe wasn't a part of that meeting. So that was a clear indication that, all right, they don't think Eric Bledsoe is going to be a part of this future. So that might be a guy that they would shop to. Makes sense with the salary too, the salary matching up. So, and that's another thing you got to think about is these young guys are nice, but there's at some point there's going to have to be a throw-in guy too with the salary match to match up with Butler's. But yeah, Dragan Bender, and if you can get Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris and the number four pick, I think you're solid. You're solid coming into next year as far as a rebuild already. You've got two legitimate guys that were lottery picks. You've got another lottery pick coming in that could possibly be Jackson, De'Aaron Fox, or Jason Tatum. I think that it alone gives you the opportunity to give Fred a bunch of young, really athletic, talented guys to build with, and that's what he was successful in college with. Why wouldn't you give Fred guys that he was successful with, give him a start that he was successful at? And the reason why you brought him in is bring these young guys together and form a great team like that. Like, you would think that's common sense, but apparently there is none.
Yeah, I mean, as much, look, I've definitely gone on the record several times through the first 2 years of his tenure in Chicago saying I don't have very much faith in Fred Hoiberg's ability to coach at the NBA level. Just based on what I've seen, the way he handles his locker room, the way he handles in-game situations, game-to-game adjustments, I don't see it. Sorry. Not sorry. But I will say, if you're talking about putting the right pieces in his system, you think about year one, the tail end of the Tibbs-Rose-Noah era. Jimmy Butler and D. Rose trying to figure out how to play and how to share the backcourt together, how to share the ball, power struggle, Joakim Noah versus Pau Gasol, power struggle, old big versus new big. I mean, it was a mess that Hoiberg came into in year one. So you give him a bit of a pass for that. And then in year two, you say things, you know, yeah, technically they got back to the playoffs, but they were still a 500 team and things didn't look much better. And again, in year two, Hoiberg's bosses do not give him the kind of pieces that he's looking for. They don't get younger and more athletic. They go out and spend $50 million on a 34-year-old Dwayne Wade, and they go out and spend $30-some million, we'll see if they actually bring back Rondo, but on an aging Rajon Rondo. It's like, dude, it's all bad, I guess is what I'm saying. I don't believe that Hoiberg should have been signed to a five-year deal. They're kind of stuck with him now. But how about you actually give him some young pieces that can work in his system the way he wants it to?
The next time we talk, and that'll be sometime Friday afternoon when you guys will hear us again, we're going to do a draft. We're going to do a post-draft show for you. What do you see coming out when we talk next? What do you think is going to be what's the headline for the Bulls? What do you think?
I think we're going to be talking on Friday morning about the fact that the Bulls, after more talk and more speculation, kept Jimmy Butler, and that Dwayne Wade, obviously earlier this week, has opted in to that second year of his contract. They are still unsure whether or not they want to bring back Rondo. According to Sean Hyken of The Athletic and a tweet of his on Tuesday, they have not officially made a decision on Rondo. They're still deciding. But if they bring back Butler and they bring back Wade, chances are they're going to bring Rondo back too. And then what we're talking about is the kid that they took with the 16th pick. That's the one, not, I wouldn't say surprise, but the one non-Gar Pax-like move we might see them make in the next 48 hours is drafting a kid at the 16th pick who isn't a multi-year player and a traditional Gar Pax kind of pick. And that's not necessarily because they're going to shake things up by choice, but if you look at the first round talent that's there, most of these kids are one and done kids. It's like, if they don't draft Justin Jackson, who's a 3-year guy at UNC, the rest of the pile of guys who might fall to the Bulls at 16 are a lot of 18, 19 year old, maybe 20 year old kids that have 1 year of experience.
I think for the headline is going to be pretty similar. I'm going to say, after much discussion, after many rumors, Butler stays with the Bulls, and the Bulls draft, I think if Terrence Ferguson's there, that's probably going to be their guy. We talked about a lot about him, and the more and more I think about it, the more and more I look at his game, it would fit what the Bulls absolutely need right now, and that's shooting and athleticism. So that's a guy, and I mean,
bingo.
It makes sense. I mean, And for me, I heard people talk about him, and they made good points. One good point, I thought that somebody on ESPN 1000 said this, that the Bulls would be getting a guy that is super mature for his age, which makes sense. He decided to make the mature decision instead of go to college to go overseas, live by himself, go to Australia, and become a pro immediately, which I think for an 18-year-old to do that, that's a lot of maturity. Hell, when I was 18, I don't see myself moving halfway across the country to be a professional. Like, and I think a lot of people can put themselves in those same shoes and say, yeah, that probably wouldn't be me. So the maturity factor there would be good.
Nah. When I was 18, I moved like a third of the way across the country to, you know, drink beer in a cornfield and go to college. Like, that's not exactly the same thing as packing up and moving to the land down under. No, you have to give Ferguson credit for making that decision. And you're right. And the other thing I would point out about Ferguson in particular is that while certain guys who I have on my Bulls draft board, like Luke Kennard of Duke, Donovan Mitchell of Louisville, a lot of these guys have really been rising in mock drafts over the last week or so leading up to the draft, whereas Terrence Ferguson I've actually seen slip down into like the late teens or even early 20s. So given the fact that his stock for some reason seems to be falling a bit, and other players who would be great fits for the Bulls and what they need right now are rising and will probably not be available at 16, Terrence Ferguson at 16, taking, like you said, an athlete and an athlete who can shoot the long ball, makes perfect sense.
I'm curious, do you think, is there any possibility that the Bulls would trade that 16th pick? I don't know what you would get for it, but if you're going to run this same team back for another year, is there a possibility that the Bulls would trade a first-round pick to maybe get somebody that would help them contend again next year, be a little bit better than they were next year, or would that just doesn't make any sense?
I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, we've heard about some teams wanting to trade up, some teams wanting to trade down. Like, there was that rumor about Lakers trying to swap their number two pick for both Sacramento's picks, the 5 pick and the 10 pick, but that didn't materialize. We've, you know, we've heard other rumors about teams wanting to add picks at some point in, like, the middle or late parts of the draft. But as far as the Bulls, I think either they're trading Jimmy Butler to move up, or they're staying at 16. I don't see them trading away that 16th pick because, you know, Gar and Paxton spent a whole lot of time talking about trading Jimmy Butler at their season-ending press conference, but they did very excitedly more than once mention, hey, we're going to add two new guys in this upcoming draft, two new kids that we can develop and bring up in our system. So it seems like they are very keen on keeping for sure that 16th pick, and they're also excited about bringing in the second round pick that they have, I believe it's 38, that they are getting from Sacramento to finally wrap up that Luol Deng trade from many years ago. So I'd say it's very likely if they don't trade Butler, they're keeping the 16th pick, and they're also going to keep their second round pick.
And then in that case, if we're looking at the team and what say Terrence Ferguson's not on the board when the Bulls pick, I feel like that's probably going to be their guy. Makes the most sense there. Give me two other guys maybe that we did or did not talk about over the last course of the last like 6 weeks where we broke down a lot of picks where we thought the Bulls were going to go. If they don't go with Terrence Ferguson, maybe he's off the board or he slips even farther than he is. Give me two other names that you think would be a good fit.
Okay, well, I'm saying this assuming that both Kennard and Mitchell are off the board because I would love to have either of them. But assuming they're gone, I think Justin Patton is a name that Bulls fans should. And I hear people groaning from here, but obviously a Creighton guy played under Doug McDermott's father, Greg McDermott at Creighton. He talks confidently at the combine about becoming a stretch four in the NBA. I'm not really sure about that. I don't know if he has that kind of range. Certainly, it doesn't look to be that way if you watch him play at Creighton, but he is in that realm of mid to late teens on draft boards, and obviously, you know, the Bulls are very familiar with him. So that's one name. Justin Jackson, I already mentioned, that's another name. And then outside of that, another big, like maybe the center Jared Allen from Texas. Like, he's been on my Bulls draft board as well. Could be a second coming of Joakim Noah kind of player, but he does have a bit more offensive utility at this point in his young career than Noah had at his age. So as much as the Bulls need shooters, based on who goes off the board before pick 16, the Bulls might end up getting stuck taking a big because a big is the best player available.
And for me, I think a guy that I talked to OG Anunoby this weekend. I did an interview with him, and he seems to be like, so far while I'm looking at draft boards, and this might not even be true coming into the next 24 hours, but he seems to be slipping. And for whatever reason, it doesn't seem like scouts are as high on, are like a little bit more weary about his injury, about his knee injury. And I know like Bulls fans don't want to deal with another guy that's had a knee injury coming into this year. But I think that guy, if he's there and some of these other names that the Bulls might have wanted aren't there, say like a Donovan Mitchell, Luke Kennard, Terrence Ferguson, even Justin Patton, like you'd said, I think OG is going to be good. He said his return is November or December. He's been working on his ball handling, and that's the first thing he wants to work on when he can fully get back onto the court. His defense is insane. His measurables are insane. He's one of the most athletic guys in this draft. His length is outrageous. I mean, the dude's got a 7'2 wingspan at a forward position. The Bulls could play more athletic like they want, the more fast pace offense, the style that Fred Hoiberg wants. While he's not a great offensive player, and that would be the one biggest ding for the Bulls, he'd be a phenomenal defensive player for the Bulls and develop really well under Fred Hoiberg. So that'd be a guy that I'd be interested in too. Another guy at 16 that I would think that if fell, which I think he's slid even farther, is a big man like we talked about in Jarrett Allen. For whatever reason, I have like this big thing on Jarrett Allen. I think he's going to be phenomenal. And just his size, his length, he's got a lot of really raw material, like raw skills that the Bulls would obviously have to develop after 1 year. But that'd be a guy that's not a four-year player, not a guy that's 22, 23 already, but has ridiculous measurables and is super athletic. Two things that the Bulls absolutely 100% need.
Yeah, you're right. And look, like I said earlier, it might come down to a little bit more drafting for need, just because Paxson did give that little bit of a hint in their press conference and said, like, obviously, y'all can tell, like, we need to add some shooting to this team. So at the same time, my worry is that when it comes to the Bulls at 16, the guys that they want to add, the wings who can shoot, anybody from the backcourt who can shoot, those players are all probably going to be gone off the board, and they're going to get stuck taking a big. Now, they could take a big who can also spread the floor, like a guy like UCLA's TJ Leaf, but in my opinion, they would be reaching a bit taking Leaf at 16. So, yeah, they might draft for need by reaching and taking a guy who they know can shoot and a guy who's an athlete, but I think when all the chips are on the table, Gar Paxson are going to be Gar Paxson, and they're going to go
best
available.
There's one other thing before we wrap up this show that I want to talk about is, I heard this too, as far as like flying around with the Bulls rumors and everything that's been going on. So obviously Wade opted in last night. Butler pretty clear that he wants to stay. I heard this about Rondo, the one guy that the Bulls were like at their postseason press conference was like, this is a guy that we want to bring back. It was like, we talked about it right after that too on our show. We said, you know, if I had to put all my money down on one guy to be returning to the Bulls, it would be Rondo out of the three of these guys, because that's what the Bulls front office was talking like. And now I heard that all of a sudden it was like, all right, Wade and Butler both met with the front office, and they don't, without clearly saying that they don't want Rondo in this system, they don't really want Rondo. They want a guy that's going to facilitate the ball better than Rondo, which to me, I don't know, it didn't make any sense. Like what we saw from him in the play.
And where did we
are we
hear
going
that?
Back?
Joe Kelly.
See, I feel like he's like stirring up all these rumors, but this one I feel like sticks the most. Like,
this one I could actually believe to be true, that Cowley said, it's not like they came out and flatly said, we don't want Rondo around, but if Butler and Wade were to stay and try to make this Bulls team more competitive, what they want is a point guard who can space the floor. And if Wade and Butler said this about Rondo, or not directly about Rondo, but just in general, like, hey, our starting point guard, wouldn't it be great if he could shoot? I mean, it's kind of ironic that if it's true that Butler and Wade said that, because it ain't like Butler's a great three-point shooter. And I went back and checked the stats from this past season. Like, Rondo shot 37% from downtown last season. Dwayne Wade, 31. It's like, okay, pot calling the kettle black a little bit. I mean, like, Dwayne Wade has never bragged about his three-point shooting abilities, and neither has Butler, but it's sort of like a throwing Rondo under the bus because he's not the perfect fit for Hoiberg's system because you need to space the floor. But you know what would be great? If you had a brilliant distributor like Rondo with floor spacers around him. That would also work. And we saw that work at times with Rondo playing with that second unit, whether you're talking about McDermott or Nico, or when Paul Zipser started to shoot the three ball confidently towards the back half of the season. It's like, I mean, it just sucks for Rondo. I feel like he's in a no-win situation. He's clearly the odd man out of this three alpha thing. And at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if Rondo wants the Bulls to pick up that option so he can make himself another, you know, $13.5 million, come back and run this thing back again next season.
It makes sense. And, like, for the Bulls to say that, okay, it's fine. It's all fine and good if that's what Butler and Wade both said, that they don't want him to be around anymore, okay, and that this whole whatever, this three alphas has already played out, as Joe Cowley had said, then, okay, well, who the hell is going to come in here and run the point that you think is going to be a better comp than Rondo can this season? I'm sorry, the Bulls don't have money to spend on a guy that can come in and be legitimately productive this season, and you sure as hell don't have that on your roster. So where are you getting that from? And now all of a sudden we hear this rumor about this Serbian point guard that's like 30 years old already, and that the Bulls are willing to, you want to sign a multi-year deal to him? Like, of course.
Milos Teodosic.
Of course, the Bulls would go and say, you know what, we're not going to go and spend money on legitimate guys that we've seen all season or the past couple seasons. We're going to go overseas to where nobody's actually really watched this guy play. Hype him up to Bulls fans as like he's the next greatest thing that is ever going to come to the NBA. Sell our fans on it, and when he disappoints us, then we'll say, well, we had to take a shot on him. He was the best player in Europe, like we did with Nico, and we're back to square one with these international players. I'm so sick and tired of the Bulls going internationally because they suck at it.
It's like Gar and Pax say to each other, hey, remember that time that Jerry Krause found that kid Tony Kukoc out there in Croatia? Wasn't that great?
Pathetic.
Wasn't it amazing how the waiter came to Chicago and helped us to another three-peat with that second team that Krause built? And then it's like, look, I mean, there's something to be said for the huge influx of European talent and global talent that has come to the NBA in the last 10 years. I mean, you talk about, I mean, and even beyond that, like older guys, like people who are on their last legs, like Dirk Nowitzki, Manu Ginobili, and then some of these younger European players that are coming into the league. Like, it's not all bogus. It just seems like the Bulls have been targeting the wrong ones. And I will say, to give Gar Pax a bit of credit, Paul Zipser looks like an NBA player, and they got him in the second round. And he is
okay, I'll give them,
from Germany.
Fine, I'll give them Paul Zipser. Cool. He's not going to be a superstar, though, and I know you're not saying he's going to be a superstar or anything. Right.
Well, I'm not saying he's a superstar. I'm saying, like, he actually looked like one of the bench pieces that was capable of seeing NBA minutes behind all those garbage guys like Jaren Grant, Cam Payne, and Michael Carter-Williams, and need I go on. Zipser looked like the
right.
best of the
so
bunch
I'll, okay,
last
I'll
season.
Give them that credit, but the Bulls have not had a reputation of finding guys that can be legitimate stars. Guys, the names that you brought up, Manu Ginobili, Dirk Nowitzki, the list goes on and on with international players, Kristaps Porzingis, like guys that have come over and now have legitimate or have had legitimate superstardom in the NBA. The Bulls aren't that team. Like, I'm trying to think of any guys that they've taken internationally that have turned into legitimate stars in the NBA. No, they haven't. Nikola Mirotic, no. Andres Nocioni was a very, very good Bull, and I liked him a lot, but he wasn't a superstar. Omar Asik, he was very good for the Bulls bench mob back then, but then when they shipped him off and he got paid a ton of money, he wasn't very good either. And then we can keep going with some of these international guys that they brought in. Tabo Cephalosha was another one. Okay, fine. He was a decent player. The Bulls actually traded him off and probably was the best out of all of the guys that they had taken recently. Now he's a legitimate role player with who? Atlanta? And the Bulls got nothing. So I have zero confidence that this guy coming over that's going to be this 29-30-year-old point guard for your team is going to do anything that's going to be worth paying them that money.
Well, hey, don't forget about Yusuf Nurkic. Bulls drafted him in 2014, and he looks like a pretty decent role player in the NBA, and they promptly turned around and traded him away on draft
night. Yeah, to get a guy that's not even on their team anymore, that they traded for a dancing mascot on the end of their bench. Like, it's so pathetic, and I can't believe it. But yeah, we'll keep tapped in on this point guard that... and we'll, after post-draft night, if he does sign with the Bulls or whenever, you know, whenever he's allowed to sign with the Bulls, kind of give you a little bit more of a breakdown about him. But immediately, when I saw that he's 29, going to be 30 when the season starts, like, seriously, like, what are you doing? Like, 30-year-old, and you've got a 36-year-old Wade, you've got a 31, 32-year-old Rondo. And that's what you're selling Bulls fans on next season, is we're going to run it all back, plus... two draft picks and a guy that's 30-year-old from Europe that nobody's ever watched.
Well, hey, look, I will say this, and this is part of a report by CSN Chicago. This kid, or not kid, this man, this grown 30-year-old man, Milos Teodosic, that we're talking about the Bulls being interested in, the NBA general manager survey this year, he was voted as the best international player currently not in the NBA with over 50% of the votes. So it's not just Gar Pax who think that this guy can play in the NBA. This guy, most people, most GMs and executives in the league, it looks like, believe that this guy can play in the NBA. But the point is, he's 30 years old. What are you doing trying to bring in a 30-year-old point guard? You already have a 30-year-old point guard. His name's Rajon Rondo.
Okay, so as we wrap up, I got a final question for you. Over the last 48 hours, there's been a couple different trades that have happened. And I've asked myself, okay, these are pretty decent trades. Who have won these trades? First of all, Indiana got screwed over by waiting around for this Paul George trade to kind of come to fruition, which it hasn't. And that one piece that a lot of the Pacers fans and even it looks like Pacers players who were tapped in wanted to come is no longer going to. And D'Angelo Russell, who got shipped to the Nets... and I thought the Nets got a good deal in that. You know, Brook Lopez was going to walk at the end of the year anyway. He's in his contract year. At least they got a legitimate guy that can be a future point guard for that team, because right now they have no draft picks and they're fumbling around at the bottom of the NBA for the foreseeable future. But I thought it was smart for the Nets to do that. And another one was Dwight Howard going to Charlotte. And it seemed like Charlotte didn't even give up all that much for Dwight. It was more of just a salary dump in Atlanta's part. But I thought about the Bulls, too. I'm like, if this is what you're running back with Rondo and Wade and Butler for another year, why wouldn't you just try and go out and get, like, one of these guys? I know it's crazy to say bring in Dwight Howard or somebody like that. But, like, at this point, what are we doing here? Like... I honestly would rather watch Dwight Howard play on the Bulls for a year with Dwayne Wade, Rondo, and Butler. At least you got four guys that were legitimate stars at one point in this league to go out there on the floor than run it back with guys that are already out there. Like,
Dwight Howard is locker room
That's what
cancer,
everybody
Jordan.
Said that about Rondo,
Nobody,
though.
Third team in 3 years. No, but not everybody says that about Rondo. Players who... are rubbed the wrong way, or coaches who are rubbed the wrong way by Rondo say that about him. Also, some people say Rajon Rondo is the best teammate I've ever had. Former Celtics, current Bulls. Nobody has said that ever about Dwight Howard.
I still think Dwight Howard can play in this league, regardless about his so-called cancer to the locker room. I still think he could legitimately play in this league. I know people are...
Well, he needs to look, and I think like it makes sense because he's going to Charlotte now and playing in a system which should be familiar to him in the way that the Hornets want to run their offense, whereas Atlanta not so much. But Look, I think it blew my mind when you talk about the details of who gets what in these trades. Dwight Howard used to be a top five guy in the NBA, and not that long ago. I mean, like, yeah, he took Orlando to the 2009 NBA Finals, but I mean, a three-time Defensive Player of the Year, six or seven-time All-Star. This guy is he's Dwight freaking Howard. He used to be considered one of the best players in the league, and he just got traded for essentially Miles Plumlee and
crazy.
Marco Bellinelli. No offense to former Bull Marco Bellinelli. We had a great year together, bud. It was a lot of fun. But are you kidding me? That
and
is
like
nothing.
You said, and then there's a lot of people that said that he should have won MVP when Rose won MVP, like that Dwight Howard got snubbed out of an MVP that year too. So, but you're right, like a legitimate top five player in the league has all of a sudden disappeared. And another thing about him too is this year he looked tiny, like compared to how big he was with Orlando and how big he was with Los Angeles. He looked tiny this year as far as like frame and size wise. I don't know if that's him trying to just prolong his career and be more athletic, be skinnier, be able to form with other teams to play longer, which would make sense. But and he also talked about how he's going to try to develop his 3-point shot this year, which is kind of laughable.
Oh my God, that's comical. But look, Dwight Howard, and that's another thing that, you know, comparing him to Rondo and whether or not they're locker room cancers and all that stuff, but Dwight Howard has never had the reputation of being a hard-working NBA player. The guy came into the league as a freak of nature athletically, but if you're talking about him like looking smaller, playing smaller, he's one of the bigs who at some point in his career worked with Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon, right? Because it seemed like the value of the big man offensively in the NBA has gone by the wayside, and nobody really develops that interior game anymore the way that Olajuwon had all those beautiful post-up moves. And Olajuwon basically said after working with Dwight one summer, like, yeah, he like, you know, didn't apply any of it, didn't do this, didn't do that, basically smashed Dwight Howard. So I'm not at all surprised that he's basically it's come to this. He's about to play for his third team in 3 years. It's just crazy how far he's fallen. Clearly his athletic abilities took them as far as they could, and now he's getting older. He's going to start having back problems and knee problems and joint problems and all that stuff. I mean, Dwight Howard is basically, like, with this trade, it's like, wow, Dwight Howard has now become irrelevant
in
the NBA.
Maybe he can revitalize it with Kemba Walker there, because if there's one guy in this league that doesn't get talked about enough, it's Kemba Walker, and I love him, and I think he's going to be great for. I think he's going to continue to be great for Charlotte. And same with, they've got another interesting piece too that I feel like haven't really figured out what they're going to do with is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and that was somebody that I had read a lot about this offseason. He said that he's going to try to be a more offensive impact for that team, and that's sort of what Charlotte drafted him so high with. What was that, 3-4 years ago, where they wanted him to be a legitimate offensive piece to this team? So, I don't know. Charlotte, I feel like for Charlotte, it was like no-brainer. Like, why wouldn't you do this? You're going to upgrade at center anyway. Right now, you've got Cody Zeller and Frank Kaminsky playing the center position for you. So, an upgrade there at least, you know, for a year. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. Oh, well, you didn't give up that much. So, for them, it was a win-win. For Atlanta, it was like, all right, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, and the other thing that's weird is that, like, people also seem to be glossing over the fact that this was, like, going to Atlanta was
right.
Dwight's, like, going home move. Like, he's an Atlanta guy, and they had 1 year of him, and we're like, nah, we're good. Thanks, Dwight, but we're going to send you on your way. His hometown team had him for a
unreal
season and was like, nah, we don't want you. I mean,
unreal.
That hurts,
one more
man
thing.
Although at the same time, like, Bulls fans are saying the exact same
that's
thing about
true
Dwayne Wade.
That's
right
true
now.
But if they watched any portion of, and that's true, I didn't watch a lot of Atlanta Hawks basketball last year, so I didn't see a whole lot of Dwight Howard and what he did. So people could be saying that they haven't watched a whole lot of Bulls basketball last year. They're like, oh, why do you guys hate Dwayne Wade so much? You know, he's got to be at least a little bit productive. No, he wasn't. So one last thing, real fast, 30 seconds. Andre Iguodala also out there too. The Bulls have discussed that as a possible option in free agency, but what he's asking, and if the Bulls gave him that money, I would lose it. I would burn everything I've gotten as far as Bulls. Andre Iguodala wants $20 million a year over 3 or 4 years. And the Bulls are legitimately interested in signing him. Like, seriously?
Please. Please. Look, obviously that makes no sense for the Bulls. Another example of the opposite of younger and more athletic. Like, Iggy is in the perfect situation, and that's why I think this is all just leverage on his part. He's like, yeah, I'm actually going to test the free agent waters. Watch me, guys. I'm totally going to do it. He's just leveraging to get more money out of Golden. Good God, that was a sneeze. Golden State. And I think, look, we already have seen Kevin Durant's going to opt out and renegotiate and is saying, yeah, I'm opting out, but I'm coming back. They're going to find the space they need to keep Andre Iguodala with that Golden State team because he is the perfect role player, the perfect sixth man for that team, and he would not be nearly as effective anywhere else at this age, at this stage in his career. And the Bulls, to offer any kind of money at him would be, well,
it would fit so perfectly in their timeline of we're going to say one thing and do completely the exact opposite. And they've kept on that timeline even this offseason. We come out in our postseason presser. Yeah, Jimmy's our guy. We're done talking trade talks with Butler, and all of a sudden, all these rumors flare up 48 hours before the draft happens. And, you know, Rondo's our big guy, but all of a sudden, we got rumors about Rondo not getting along with Butler and Wade and not wanting him here. So it's funny. It just all runs in the same timeline as Gar and Pax, but I think that's going to about do it here on the Debatables. You can follow us on Twitter at Debatables. You can follow us, me and Matt, on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck. There's going to be a lot going on here in the next 24 hours, so we will keep you up to date. Hopefully this held you guys over in kind of a quiet day for the Bulls now. So hopefully this holds you off and over. We'll be back on Friday for you guys to talk about who the Bulls took in the draft, possibly if they make a deal, and which we both don't think that there's going to be anything. But hey, anything can happen in 24 hours, 48 hours. So we'll be back with all of that news. Remember, all of our stuff is over at almightyballer.com. You can listen to all of our content there. If you're listening to us on Dash Radio, thank you so much for listening. Tell your friends to download the Dash Radio app. On the Almighty Baller channel every Thursday from 6 to 7 a.m. and 11 to noon Central Time. On the Almighty Baller channel where basketball is always being discussed. But for Matt and Jordan, have a good week. Hopefully you enjoy the draft. We'll see you on Friday.
Will you stop it?
That don't make any sense.
I remember at nights I would come in the gym. You know, I'm thinking of him by myself. And I look up and I see P on the treadmill.
What?
Everybody used to say, who's the best? Michael Jordan or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
They said,
who did you think
was the best? Kobe or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
Guess what the story is now?
Who's
better, LeVar or Michael Jordan?
I ain't think about no damn LeVar.
Those are some good nuggets. Good thing somebody told you them.
That's not the first time you've said those are some good nuggets either.
The Debatables, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories of the week. The Debatables, live on Dash Radio every Thursday. New episodes available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and at almightyballer.com.